Meet Claude, Anthropic's AI assistant, ready to transform how your organization works. Empower every person in your organization with AI that thinks like a teammate, not a tool. Securely upload your company knowledge and watch as Claude helps every department, from engineering to marketing, produce their best work faster. Your data stays protected while your teams reach new heights. Discover enterprise-grade AI at anthropic.com/enterprise.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
Everyone is worried about what they did over Christmas in terms of alcohol consumption. They're also worried about their food consumption, and they're probably worried about familial relations as well that maybe got bumpy at certain dinner table conversations. But if you got through all of that, well done. But what does the year ahead need and have in store for you? And what should be good practice when it comes to keeping your food intake at a reasonable level and a beneficial level? For this week's Ask the Expert, I'm joined by Sarah Keogh, who is a dietitian and she's founder of Eat Well. You're very welcome, Sarah.
Good morning.
Thank you for coming in, and it's a great time to have you, obviously. My first question to you was, lots of people are eating lots of carbohydrate and sugar, and you were saying that's okay. We kind of expect that this time of the year.
That's all part of Christmas. And you know what? I think sometimes, yes, healthy eating is going to be important, but you really have to just enjoy food as well. And I actually hate to see people kind of restricting things all over Christmas.
You're my kind of dietitian, right?
Well, do you know, I often kind of go, you know, I might be a health expert, but I'm not a health freak. You know, I think you do need to take the time, and I do think you do need to actually sit down and, you know, let it go. Yes, healthy eating is important, but you've got to get it right most of the time for good nutrition, but it does not have to be 100%.
So when do people need to return to their normal patterns? When do you say enough stodge?
I probably wouldn't drag it all the way out to the end of January. You know, I remember hearing a conversation years ago and people were saying, well, you know, it starts on the 1st of December and ends on the 31st of January. And I think you could do a lot of damage if you're kind of not paying attention for that length of time. But, you know, give yourself a week or so. And most people, to be honest, by sort of Monday are going to be ready, nearly looking for a bit of a salad or something, you know, at that stage. You know, it's kind of there's actually
salad. That word salad is like,
but it's not a bad word.
It's out of season.
But it's more coming back in. I suppose my thing at this time of the year is to say to people, would you just not jump on crash diets, detox diets, this idea that we all have to lose weight because it's January or we all have to go on some sort of mad thing. You know, if you are thinking about changing nutrition in the new year, is just to take it slowly, carefully. Have a look at, you know, who you might be following on social media with that you're not getting scaremongering.
So if you do want to tackle the issue and you feel you've put on a few pounds and that's something you want to do, are you better to tackle it from the diet point of view or the exercise point of view, or pummel away at both of them, or
whatever you're able to do? Because sometimes I see people in the new year taking on too much, and you know, sometimes people are like, you know, this is it, this is the year I'm going to get fit and I'm going to get lose weight and I'm going to do all of these
things. Here's the gym membership.
Do you know what I mean? And suddenly they're taking on too much, and after about 4 weeks they're overwhelmed with it. So I would always go with the make one small change, you know, and make sure it's something little and build from there. You know, build in a habit. You know, around food you can have 30 or 40 different habits around food.
And how do you know if you're overweight? Because we have the whole BMI debate. We've texters saying, is that accurate? Is it reliable? Is it trustworthy? Is it
I always kind of go, do you know what? What I would say to you is overweight people know they're overweight. We rarely need to sort of take out a ruler and start doing it. What I would be more cautious of is people are actually a lovely, healthy weight, but think they need to be thinner. And, you know, if you're really not sure, you can actually book in with a registered dietitian who can actually have a chat with you. And I've done that so many times over the years where people have come into me going, I really need to lose 2 stone. I'm looking at them going, no, absolutely not.
You are a tall person, right?
I am a tall person.
So it's distributed, right?
You know what I mean?
Smaller people like me, it doesn't get distributed, right?
You know, but the thing about it is, it's different body shapes. And I think perceptions around what we think a healthy body should look like is a huge thing. You know, I mean, you know, cellulite's not the end of the world, you know, this kind of thing. So I think sometimes people actually are at a lovely healthy weight, but put themselves under pressure because there's ideas around what a body should look like that aren't really accurate at all.
So what would you say is what I mean by that is the quickest route? Is it to just take out certain fat adding diets, you know, to sort of re-sculpt your diet? Or is it get out and do the 100 days of walking? Or is it, you know, people say, what's my first step into
I would say move. The nice thing is to do a little bit of movement. And even if you're only able to do 5-10 minutes a day, I love the 100 days of walking. I actually think it's lovely. But, you know, so for some people, they can feel guilty then if they miss a day. So it's, you know, build in a little bit of movement. And the other thing I would say to you in terms of food and nutrition is I would keep an eye on snacking. Breakfast, lunch, dinner, fantastic. But if you're all day grazing, I'd give a little bit of a break to that. That's a very new habit for humans in the last sort of 20, 30 years, is this nibbling all day long.
And the chocolate thing is my fatal flaw, right?
Oh, but chocolate's lovely. No, and I'm not saying never have chocolate, but you know what to do? Save it up and have it as a bit of dessert after dinner rather than something that you're nibbling on all day long.
Yeah, so don't keep reaching into the jar.
But you know, it's actually okay to go a couple of hours without eating anything. It's good for your teeth as well.
Steady,
you know,
steady there, right?
It's just an hour or two. You know,
now, we have a few texters coming in. Obviously, people at this time of the year are focused on this. It's getting into the new year with good habit and good practices, Sarah. We have, I have a picky eater aged 6. Can your expert, that's you, can you tell them or ask them, has there been studies done on how picky a child should be in their younger years? You know, does it impact in their later years if they're not picky enough, etc.? So
mountains,
how much of the
research
habits are set down, I suppose?
So mountains of research really on this, and there is so much going on with a picky eater that I could be here for 2 hours with you on it. What I would say to you is picky eating generally peaks around the age of 6 and improves after that. The vast majority of picky eaters are not missing any nutrition. The vast majority actually are fine from a nutrition point of view. They might have a restricted intake, but they're generally okay. It's also, there's a huge genetic component to it. So it's not often what parents are doing right or wrong. It's often genetic. So it's usually, you might very often have a parent who's a picky eater in the family as well. There is a huge amount that you can actually do. But I would say if you have a seriously picky eater, I would, again, I'd go to a pediatric registered dietitian, and there's loads of them out there. If you have a look, Carolyn Monaghan, for example, is fantastic, and she does a lot of work with picky eaters. And I would, it's definitely worth a little bit of time in there to have a look at it.
Okay. Just in case people are joining us late, Sarah Keogh is here at me in studio. She's a dietitian and founder of Eat Well, and she's very busy at this time of the year, right? A few other texts coming in. We have, I presume this is a possibly a rugby playing son of some kind. I could be wrong, but it says, my teenage son has started using creatine. Is it safe? Obviously, we don't have an age there, but I mean, all these various supplements to bulk up and so on.
They are. I mean, creatine is well researched. It's been around for a long time. It's a safe thing to take. It's not really recommended for under 16s. We don't recommend anything around sort of protein shakes and things like that for the under 16s because they are still growing. And particularly for boys, they're going to grow up before they grow out. And sometimes you're looking at guys who are getting their height and they're thinking, well, I'm a bit on the slim side. And you're going, that is just completely normal human physiology. You know, most guys don't start to bulk out in terms of getting broader until quite their late teens, if not their early 20s.
Just let nature do its thing.
A little bit. I mean, creatine, again, it can be useful, and it depends on what level they're actually playing at. So you will have some sort of teenagers who are kind of heading into elite level. But again, I go and talk to a good sports dietitian, you know, that, and actually have a chat with somebody about it and get specific. But what I would say, if they are using creatine, to be very careful to only use what's recommended. Sometimes the idea, you know, if one is good, 10 must be better, doesn't work with creatine. It can be harmful if you're taking a lot of it. There is a debate about how much of a benefit it actually gives as well. So it does give a little bit of a benefit, but
I presume initially you get a bulk up, but then it stops.
Kind of. I mean, it in and of itself, creatine doesn't build muscle, which is the bit of the myth with it. What it does is it recycles energy in the cell so that you can actually lift a slightly heavier weight or do a slightly longer workout. And that's where the extra muscle tends to come from.
Okay, and we'll talk in a second about the weight loss drugs thing, which is going to be absolutely enormous again in the year ahead. Another texter saying, just how bad is salt for us? I do like salty things, which I presume is the crisp potential there. You can overdo it also in cooking by throwing it at it and seasoning and so on. So we know salt is bad if you eat loads of it. So how does somebody have a rule of thumb about, I'm eating too much salt? I'm not, like, you know, like, it's kind of hard to know.
It's kind of hard to know. I mean, the thing about salt is, yes, it does raise blood pressure, and even a slight increase in blood pressure over a lifetime does predict things like more stroke and heart disease later on. But salt also adds lovely flavour to food. And we were joking about salads earlier, but salad actually means to add salt. And the thing over the years, people say to me, well, I hate salads. And it's like, you've got to put a dressing or a flavour on them. You're never going to eat them, you know. But too much salt is an issue. So what you're going to watch in terms of salt is very salty foods that we know are salty. Your crisps, your popcorn, your salted peanuts, your ham, your bacon, those kind of foods. Now, in fairness to the Food Safety Authority, over the last 20 years, they have had a massive programme going on behind the scenes, and they have taken huge amounts of salt out of vast amounts of processed foods, which I think people don't really
always. So it was a lot worse a few decades ago.
It was a lot worse. I mean, I think I was looking at something recently. I think an average family of four, they've taken 4 kilograms of salt a year out of their diet.
But things like soup, right? Which you think, oh, vegetable soup. Yeah, but there's loads of salt in these soup. Yeah. And there doesn't need to. I know they're a preservative, so I understand why they do it. But surely the manufacturers can do better in that.
So it's to do with that. But also people like it. Irish people love very salty food. So, you know, you've kind of got to persuade Irish people actually to want a little bit less salt.
Yeah.
So yes, reduce it if you can.
What exactly is omega-3, says a texter, and does it impart any real benefit?
It does. Omega-3 is a very specific type of fat. So we talk about fat, but within fat, there's hundreds of different sort of compounds. And some of them are what we will call essential fatty acids. And omega-3s would come under this heading of what we call essential fatty acids. And there's a couple of different ones out there. There's a type called DHA, which is very important for brain structure. So, you know, in terms of the developing brain, it's really important through pregnancy and then just throughout adult life, just to keep the structure of the brain. very nice and healthy. You have a second type of omega-3 called EPA, and this one is all about your mood. So people who get things like depression and anxiety are more likely to have low levels of EPA, this really important omega-3 in their blood, but also when we actually give it to them, symptoms, if we look at anxiety and depression, symptoms do fall after about 3 months with this EPA. There's a third type called ALA, which is the type we typically find in plants. So EPA and DHA would be your fish oils, and then ALA would be your plant omega-3s, which is in things like nuts and seeds. And this helps to do things like lower cholesterol and reduce inflammation. So what's very good for us is to actually get a mixture of all of them.
So what do you do? Just go and get a supplement with omega-3?
Well, you can get a supplement. I would always go kind of food first if you can, because you get other nutrients with the food. So if you eat something like salmon, mackerel, sardines, they're going to give you that omega-3, but they will also give you protein.
Do you need to eat a lot of quantities?
No, once or twice a week actually would cover you. If you're someone who's never going to eat fish, though, a good fish oil would be useful. And then for the plant omega-3s, adding things like nuts and seeds into what you're eating is going to be fantastic as well.
Okay. Excuse me, we have a lot of other things coming in. There's a lot of interest in this area, which is probably not a surprise to you. We also have, has your expert, which again is you, have any experience of ARFID in older adults? This is avoidant restrictive food intake disorder.
Yes, and so ARFID would be sometimes called very extreme.
Is that the picky
eating
thing again?
It is, but it's
going up another notch or two.
We might look at something like picky eating, where a child maybe doesn't like certain foods. What you will get in some people is they may have a huge sensory issue. So if we talk about, some people have sharper eyesight and some people have weaker eyesight. Some people have a stronger sense of the feel of a food. They might be have stronger sense of touch, stronger sense of smell. And so food tastes intense or feels different in their mouth. Now, there can be 100 different reasons for ARFID, but one of the more common one is someone whose sensory system is just really wired all the way up to 11, if you think, in the sense that, you know, sometimes eating food is just so actually physically uncomfortable that they will not eat. And wow, it's not unusual. You would definitely
I don't have that problem.
No, a lot of us don't, thankfully, because it's really not good. It's awful for the person who's experiencing it as well. And you would definitely have people who would be permanently tube fed. Because they just, you know, sometimes people say, well, you have a picky eater, if you let them get hungry enough, they'll eat it. And for some kids, that will work. But for some people, they actually would die of starvation rather than eat, because this sensation of eating is so uncomfortable to them. But that does require a lot of specialist input and a lot of specialist help with that. And again, I would, you know, maybe have a chat. Sometimes picky eating can be kind of dismissed a little bit with that. But again, if you have talked to a registered dietitian, sometimes a good speech therapist is fantastic as well, or an occupational therapist can be brilliant. And usually you would work with all three.
Okay, I'm going to keep that. These rolling in. We're getting value for money from you didn't expect this, Sarah. One of the other ones is about arthritis. Are there foods that are particularly good or beneficial or bad, obviously, for arthritis? I'm thinking calcium, but maybe I'm wrong.
So in terms of arthritis, what we do know it to add in, or back to the fish oils, particularly the one I mentioned, EPA, is very, very valuable, especially for rheumatoid arthritis. But you need to give it at least 3 months to see a benefit with that. There is some good work around vitamin D being important for arthritis. Weight, unfortunately, is a big factor. We know that if you sort of put on 1 pound in weight, it puts 4 pounds of pressure onto your knees. So that if you can nudge the weight even by 5 pounds, it can actually take a lot of pressure off the joints, and that does make a huge difference. But having worked on an osteoarthritis program for a few years, I would say see a physiotherapist, because building muscle to support the joints actually is hugely
right. So
you're not
saying food it's helpful, but it's secondary to your exercises.
Your physiotherapist is your absolute go to, and particularly if it's knee arthritis, you need butt muscles and you need muscles in your thighs, because it pulls the joints away from each other.
It's basic physics, right? Isn't it?
It's
getting
just supporting
different things to do.
To go with it. But what I would say on arthritis, I see lots of people think they need to cut out things like tomatoes and citrus fruits and things like that. And one of the posts I have up on my Instagram account at Sarah QRD goes through some of those food myths. And I think it's useful for people to have a look at them, because it's very easy to suddenly go, well, I have to cut out dairy, or I have to cut out wheat, or I have to cut out everything. For arthritis, no. There's been whole things written on tomatoes and all the rest. They don't make any difference. So there's nothing, actually adding in all your fruit and veg
there's
is going
so many
to be really
around,
helpful.
I mean, you can hear my
amount.
Voice is slightly hoarse, right? You can hear it. So everyone said to me, Honey, you know, then I looked it up, it's a total myth, it doesn't apparently...
No, but it tastes nice when you put it in the lemon, you know?
Yeah, exactly, it's a psychological support. Another one coming in here, is it safe to use glutamine powder for gut health? I can barely say the word glutamine.
So glutamine is an amino acid. Our bodies actually make a huge amount of it. It becomes what we call conditionally essential. So some amino acids we do have to eat all the time. Others our bodies can make. But sometimes if we're very under what I'm going to call physical stress, in the sense of like a sickness or an illness, we can sometimes need a little bit more glutamine. There is some research that it's quite helpful for the gut. But where I've seen that research done, it's people in intensive care who are hugely sick, traumatic injuries, where we see that benefit from glutamine. On a sort of a day-to-day basis, a healthy person taking glutamine, we're not seeing any major benefit. There's no harm to it, but your body is making it.
This next thing sounds painful. Okay. A perforated ulcer.
Oh, wow. Okay.
What would the best diet be for if you're suffering from this?
Well, I'd be definitely talking to my doctor, because in this day and age, perforated ulcers, kind of one of those, shouldn't be happening with that. So we're going to look at really your antacid medication is going to be a big one. And I've had loads of patients over the years who stopped taking their antacid medication without telling their doctor. So please, I'm assuming that this is you, but if you have, will you please go back on it? Some people just do produce a lot more acid, and it just needs to be looked after. You also need to be checked for a bacteria called Helicobacter pylori, which causes a huge amount of acid in the stomach and is a big cause of ulcers in the stomach.
I like the way you just roll these words out without missing a beat.
I've been practicing really hard, right? But what I would say from a nutrition point of view, if you're getting a lot of acid in the stomach, I would, and particularly something like an ulcer, it's zero alcohol.
Okay, that's
but alcohol really is hard on the lining of the stomach. So if you're getting ulcers, just zero alcohol.
Does it
just
matter
take
which
it
type of alcohol?
Sadly, no.
Wine, beer, they're all the
no,
same.
No, it's the alcohol itself that's actually damaging the lining of the stomach. So just steer clear.
We also have another texter saying, lots of social media posts talk about going sugar-free. Should we, and is it a good or bad idea?
No, it's not. We don't need to do it. I mean, do we need to reduce sugar? Yeah, most of us could definitely bring it down a bit. But if you're worried about sugar, it's, you know, maybe reduce the soft drinks, biscuits, cakes, but reduce. No health expert with proper research behind them is telling us to ban all sugar. It's just lazy nutrition. It's a quick sort of sounds good. You know, this idea of sugar is toxic and all the rest is not there.
And you won't be able to get it out. It's in everything. In some
well,
form.
It's naturally traces going to be there in foods. Do you know what I mean? There's a bit of lactose
fruit.
In milk.
I mean, there's a lot of it in fruit. Right?
Do you know what I mean? So it's fine. But yeah, I mean, we could do with definitely reducing added sugars, but the natural sugars and things like fruit, yogurt, milk, we don't need to be worried about at all.
Can you drink too much water? Which I'm now going to do.
You can, but you'd really want to be going for it. So definitely if you drink far too much water, it washes sodium out of your body, and sodium is involved in water balance. And it can actually, if you knock too much sodium out of your body, it can actually cause your brain to swell and can be very, very serious. But you are talking about drinking maybe 8 litres an hour with that, or a huge amount all in one go. So your normal sort of 2, even 3 litres of water a day will be fine.
Listen, we're going to have to leave it there. So much information packed in. Brilliant to go across so many different diverse issues. Sarah Keogh is a dietitian, and she's founder of Eat Well. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Good luck in the year ahead. Thank you.
Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland.
On News Talk.